WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
This is Fresh Air. I'm Dave Davies, senior writer for the Philadelphia Daily News, sitting in for Terry Gross. Monday could be a big day for actress Helen Mirren. She's up for 3 Golden Globe Awards. 2 are for her portrayals of British monarchy, Elizabeth I in an HBO miniseries, and Elizabeth II in the film The Queen. The 3rd nomination is for her role as Detective Jane Tennyson in last season's episodes of the BBC mystery series Prime Suspect. Helen Mirren was introduced to many American viewers 15 years ago when she played Tennyson in the first Prime Suspect series. She has a long list of other stage, screen, and television credits and earned Oscar nominations for Best Supporting Actress for her performances in The Madness of King George and Gosford Park. Here's a clip from her film The Queen, directed by Stephen Frears. In this scene, Princess Diana has just been killed and the Queen, played by Mirren, is on the phone with British Prime Minister Tony Blair.
Coming down to London at the earliest opportunity.
It would be a great comfort to your people.
And would help them with their grief.
Their grief? If you imagine I'm going to drop everything and come down to London before I attend to my grandchildren who've just lost their mother, then you're mistaken. I doubt there is anyone who knows the British people more than I do, Mr. Blair, nor who has greater faith in their wisdom and judgment. And it is my belief that they will any moment reject this mood, which is being stirred up by the press, in favor of a period of restrained grief and sober private mourning. That's the way we do things in this country, quietly, with dignity. It's what the rest of the world has always admired us for.
I spoke to Mirren last year when she played a 16th century monarch, the temperamental and passionate Elizabeth I in the HBO miniseries.
Well, gentlemen, I've come to hear you talk, and I trust you will watch me while I listen.
Your Majesty, we beg to raise the question of your marriage.
Well, so long as you do not come to me to complain about your wives, I am content.
Well, Helen Mirren, welcome to Fresh Air.
Thank you.
Can you think of anything in the reading that you did about Elizabeth that you thought gave you some, you know, emotional insight into this woman?
I think one thing in particular really affected me was reading that at one point she was so angry she actually passed out.
Really?
Yes. And I thought, wow, that's like really angry. I can't imagine being so angry that you literally pass out. And then, you know, you really got the, I got the impression of an incredibly tempestuous, emotional woman where she was unafraid of her own emotions. She had no reason to be afraid of them. She could let them loose because she was a queen. She could do anything. She could cry. She could scream. She could throw shoes. She could shut herself away. She could, really play up, you know, as far as she wanted to without any kind of censure, really.
Well, I thought we should listen to a clip from Queen Elizabeth I, in which you play the monarch. And the one I thought we would hear is where you, as Queen Elizabeth, learned that the Earl of Leicester, whom the Queen has had a long-running affair or flirtation with, she's learned that he is actually secretly married. He is played here by Jeremy Irons. And, of course, my guest, Helen Mirren, Elizabeth I. Let's hear her discover that her friend is actually married.
Oh, you son of a whore.
Your Majesty, you must know that...
Know what, my lord?
That I would never have taken a wife if there were but a chance you would smile upon my suit.
I never wish to see your face again.
My heart still runs on you, I swear it.
Be off before I hang you. I'm minded to hang you now. With my own hands, too.
Yes.
Get out of my sight!
Well,
We forbid you access to our presence. You are no longer welcome at our court. Be gone, sir. Now.
You know, what's interesting about listening to that scene is that we hear the Queen, when she loses control, actually use the word I in public, refer to herself in the first person singular, and then she realizes it, composes herself, and begins speaking in the royal we. You are no longer yes. welcome in our presence. Did you sort of have to become comfortable with a public and a private Elizabeth in developing this character?
Yes. I mean, that's very much what our piece is about, is the public versus and intertwined with the private. It's very difficult to go behind the velvet curtains or the heavy oak doors of history, you know, and find out what that person was actually like in private, because obviously so much of what we read is very much either through contemporary writing that's flattering, highly flattering. No one quite, you know, certainly you wouldn't dare criticize the Queen.
You know, one of the things about doing it, portraying a 16th century queen, is you wear a lot of stuff.
stuff
in your hair.
Couldn't be enough for me, I tell you.
Yeah, you like that.
I loved
huh?
all of that. Oh, I loved it. Yes, it's great.
Well, I read that. Did you also wear contact lenses to tint your eyes?
Yes, I did. I noticed when I looked at all the portraits, its her eyes were always very black, very dark. And although it was very fashionable to have white skin, the only descriptions that I could find of her that were maybe truthful actually described her as having rather sallow skin. So she wasn't this white-skinned, red, you know, rosy-cheeked person at all. She was, her red hair was natural. And then one of the ambassadors described her as having black eyes. And I thought this black-eyed look, which is very piercing, it's quite intimidating. If you know anyone with very dark, dark brown eyes, you know, it's quite a piercing, intimidating look it gives to their eyes. I thought that would be quite a good tool. So I thought he's probably historically accurate. So yes, I wore dark brown lenses.
Now, of course, it's interesting that in addition to this portrayal of Elizabeth I, you play Elizabeth II, right, the current queen. How would you compare the two? Is there any connection?
There's a big connection, you know. It was very interesting. Such completely different personalities. You couldn't get more extreme differences in personality. The Elizabeth I, very not governed by her emotions, far from it. She was governed by her sense of power and her sense of autocracy. But a much more emotional person. And this present queen, who's governed by an overriding sense of self-discipline, duty, and sacrifice. But the thing that they absolutely have in common is this single-minded dedication and desire to be who they are. And I think they share that absolutely. And it's what makes both of them, I think, very mighty monarchs. And I think Elizabeth II will, as history travels on, will be looked back on as a very, very iconic and important figure in British history.
We're speaking with actress Helen Mirren. We'll talk more after a break. This is Fresh Air. My guest is actress Helen Mirren. She's nominated for 3 Golden Globe Awards for her roles in The Queen, Prime Suspect, and Elizabeth I. You went into films in your 20s, late 20s. And then in the 70s, I read you sort of took a hiatus from a traditional acting course and joined Peter Brook's Experimental International Center of Theater Research, which involved, touring Africa and parts of the United States, performing in very small settings, California farm workers.
Yes, indeed. Cesar Chavez, in fact.
Right. What appealed to you about that?
It worked.
And then what did you get from that experience?
Well, you know, it was a part of my sort of my search, my holy grail, to try and be better. And having done a lot of Shakespeare in that formal theatre environment, I felt it was time to throw everything up in the air. And I was lucky enough to be around when Brook was just beginning that particular period of his life's work, and I joined for just for 1 year. So, yes, we travelled through Africa. We started in Algeria and went down to Nigeria, south of Nigeria, and then back up again, travelling in jeeps and working in just very, very small villages, never in any towns. And then we came to America and we worked with the Teatro Campesino and with other theatre groups in America.
Was this for you more a matter of developing your acting craft, and or was it a matter of personal or political growth?
Not political. So it was apolitical. I mean, I think it was personal. Yes, personal acting growth. Not personal growth as a person. Although, of course, it turned into a bit of that as well, because when you're challenged like that, and it was very, very challenging, difficult work, you are, you know, you do have to make some sort of personal growth, which I'm still in the process of learning from that experience now. But it was very much to discover other ways of acting. I don't know that I really actually learned anything in reality, except for conquering fear, maybe.
I wanted to talk about another film for which you received a Oscar nomination for Best Supporting Actress. That's Gosford Park, a film I don't know well because I've only seen it twice. It's wonderfully complex.
You've only seen it twice.
Yes, I've only seen it twice.
I know what you mean about that's the nature of Altman's movies, isn't it? Yes.
Right. There's so much happening that you can never quite get it all. I mean, this is one in which there's a weekend party in a British estate in the 1930s. And the wonderful thing is that we see the world of the affluent, the middle-class people, and then also below stairs, their servants, which you occupy in this case. And I wanted to thought we would listen to a clip from the film. This is just to explain what's happening here. In this, you play the housekeeper of a wealthy man, Lord William Stockbridge, who hosts this party and is actually murdered in the course of it. And it turns out that when your character, Mrs. Wilson, was a young girl, she was one of many servants whom Stockbridge had sexually preyed upon. She bore a son which had been sent away to an orphanage, but which now many years later turns out returns to the estate as a valet of one of the guests. He recognizes his father and decides he's going to kill this man who had abandoned him. But your character, Mrs. Wilson, sees this coming and instead poisons Stockbridge first, so her son, in fact, can't be accused of killing him. And the scene we're going to play here is a memorable one in which you are discussing this with another servant, played by Kelly MacDonald. Let's listen.
But even if Robert is your son, how did you know that he meant to harm his father?
What gift do you think a good servant has that separates them from the others? It's the gift of anticipation. And I'm a good servant. I'm better than good. I'm the best. I'm the perfect servant. I know when they'll be hungry and the food is ready. I know when they'll be tired and the bed is turned down. I know it before they know it themselves.
Are you going to tell them?
Why? What purpose would it possibly serve?
What if they find out what happened?
Not much of a crime to stab a dead man, is it? They can never touch him. That's what's important, his life.
And your life?
Didn't you hear me? I'm the perfect servant. I have no life.
And that's our guest, Helen Mirren, in the film Gosford Park. She's speaking there with Kelly MacDonald. A wonderful scene. I wonder if you could tell us a little about making that.
Yes, lovely piece of writing.
Well, that's what's interesting, I think. A lot of actors love to be with Altman because, I mean, his reputation is that of a lot of improvising and free-flowing. I mean, this is, you've come from, you know, performing a lot of Shakespeare. What was it like to work with Altman?
It's a bit of a misnomer, really, that, you know, Altman is all about improvisation. That's not actually true. He choreographs very precisely. You know, he loves the text, and the text is important. But what he does do is he has everybody mic'd all the time. And so as important as the visual story is the sound story in an Altman movie. And because you're mic'd, everything you say And sometimes you do improvise it. All actors do, you know. Those little moments of improvisation can be used. And then, of course, the way he shoots is very extraordinary. And it creates this improvisational look to the movie. But in reality, it's very, very carefully choreographed and very precise, in fact. That was my experience, anyway.
Yeah. What do you mean by the way he shoots, creating that feel?
Well, I mean, it's a sort of technical thing, but for example, he very often shoots with two cameras, and the two cameras are often moving simultaneously, which is sort of unheard of on when you're shooting a movie. And you'll never know if you're in close up or if you're in a wide shot or if it's a mid shot while you're playing the scene. You don't know what kind of shot you're in. So you can't become conscious in that particular way. It's a particular kind of technique that's very visually. It creates a sort of rather extraordinary thing, and also for the actors, you play it almost like a play. You play the whole scene through, not quite knowing when you're on camera, if you're off camera, if you're in close up. So it's very individual, and I loved the way he worked. I thought it was amazing.
Well, Helen Mirren, in 1991, you had a role with which you've become much identified when you played Jane Tennyson in the Prime Suspect series. I thought we'd hear a little bit of the first Prime Suspect series, and this one is one in which you have been a district chief inspector. That's the rank where you should be able to handle a murder investigation, but the men in the department have found ways not to let you actually get an investigation to cover. And in this case, one person who has begun a major investigation, one of the officers has died, and you've come in to assert your right to get involved in this major police work.
This may not be the right time, sir, but under the circumstances, I'm not quite sure when would be the right time. I'm offering to take over the murder investigation. I don't have to tell you that I am qualified to handle this investigation, and that I have been waiting for... Well, I don't have to tell you how long. 18 months. And in that time, I've had to handle more paperwork than I did at Reading for my whole 5 years dealing with sex cases. I know DCI Shefford was at a crucial stage of the investigation.
I have to see his wife this afternoon. Don't expect me to make any decisions now. This is not the right time.
Well, when is the right time? Look, I am the only officer of my rank who has continually overstepped, sidestepped, whatever. Just give me the chance to prove that I can
do it. You don't have to prove yourself to me. Let me think about it.
Well, that's not enough, Michael. I'm getting sick to death of this so-called Metropolitan Police Survey being thrown at me. So, all right, apparently 90% of the time the general public would prefer a male officer. But until one of us gets a chance to prove that that survey is a biased, outdated load of old...
A man who I respected highly died right there. And now, Inspector, is not the time to thrust your women's rights down my throat. I'll get back to you.
Thank you, sir.
That was my guest, Helen Mirren, playing Jane Tennyson in the original Prime Suspect series. Acting in that scene with her was John Benfield. A lot of the fans of that series, me included, could hardly imagine anybody but you in that role. Did it seem like a perfect fit when you read it?
I don't know about that. I mean, I did recognize that I was jolly lucky to have it, you know, because it's so rare, even to this day, incidentally, that a woman drives the narrative of a drama. You can have very good female roles and things, but rarely are they actually driving the narrative. And then it was even less likely, especially on television or anywhere. That was what fascinated me, the fact that it was a female character driving the narrative. The fact that it was a police thing and Jane Tennyson and all the rest of it didn't really impinge upon my consciousness. I just saw that it was a you know, really a lovely, complex role.
Did you learn any gestures or vocal mechanisms that you put into that character? Do you recall?
The only thing was that I, you know, a policewoman who was quite high up, said she never folds her arms. I thought that was a very interesting. Police are very, very into body language. They can read you like a book, the good detectives. They understand body language extremely well. It's how they do their job a lot of the time. And she said, don't fold your arms. Because folding your arms is, it looks, you think you're being strong. And I laugh now. I often see, you know, there's big posters of women playing police women, and they've always standing there with their arms folded, thinking, oh, this looks powerful and strong. Not, you know, folding your arms is a defensive action, and much more powerful is to stand with your arms relaxed by your side, open, you know, ready.
Well, Helen Mirren, thanks so much for spending some time with us.
Thank you very much.
Helen Mirren. She's nominated for Golden Globe Awards for her television roles in Prime Suspect and Elizabeth I and the feature film The Queen. I spoke to her last year. I'm Dave Davies, and this is Fresh Air.